Chapter 25. Saint-Denis, Northern Paris. Amira Asaf closed the door of the flat behind her. The corridor, a long gray cement tunnel, was in semi-darkness, lit only by the occasional flickering fluorescent tube. She pushed the wheelchair toward the bank of elevators. A woman, Moroccan by the sound of her accent, was yelling at her two young children. Farther on, a trio of African boys was listening to American hip-hop music on a portable stereo. This is what remained of the French Empire, she thought. A few islands in the Caribbean and the human warehouses of Saint-Denis. She came to the elevator and pressed the call button, then looked up and saw that one of the cars was heading her way. Thank God, she thought. It was the one part of the journey that was completely beyond her control. The rickety old elevators of the housing block. Twice during her preparation, she'd been forced to hike down 23 floors because the elevators weren't working. A bell chimed, the doors screeched open. Amira wheeled the chair into the carriage and was greeted by the overwhelming stench of urine. As she sunk toward earth, she pondered the question of why the poor piss in their elevators. When the doors opened, she thrust the chair into the lobby and drew a deep breath. Not much better. Only when she was outside in the cold, fresh air of the quadrangle did she escape the odor of too many people living too close together. There was something of the third world village square in the broad quadrangle that lay at the center of the four large housing blocks. Clusters of men, divided by their country of origin, chatting in the cool twilight. Women bearing sacks of groceries, children playing football. No one took notice of the attractive young Palestinian woman pushing a wheelchair-bound figure of indeterminate sex and age. It took precisely 7 minutes for her to get to the Saint-Denis station. It was a large station, a combination RER and metro, and because of the hour, crowds were streaming out of the exits into the street. She entered the ticket hall and immediately spotted two policemen, the first evidence of the security alert. She had watched the news updates, and new security had been tightened at metro and rail stations across the country. But did they know something about Saint-Denis? Were they looking for a disabled woman kidnapped the previous night from a psychiatric hospital in England? She kept walking. "Excuse me, mademoiselle." She turned around. A station attendant, young and officious, with a neatly pressed uniform. "Where are you going?" The tickets were in her hand. She had to answer truthfully. "The RER," she said, then added, "to the Gare de Lyon." The attendant smiled. "There's an elevator right over there." "Yes, I know the way." "Can I be of some help?" "I'm fine. Please," he said, "allow me." Just her luck, she thought. One pleasant station attendant in the entire metro system, and he was working Saint-Denis tonight. To refuse would look suspicious. She nodded and handed the attendant the tickets. He led her through the turnstile, then across the crowded hall to the elevator. They rode down in silence to the RER level of the station. The attendant led her to the proper platform. For a moment, she feared he intended to stay until the train arrived. Finally, he bid her a good evening and headed back upstairs. Amira looked at the arrivals board. 12 minutes. She glanced at her watch, did the math. No problem. She sat on a bench and waited. 12 minutes later, the train swept into the station and came to a stop. The doors shot open with a pneumatic hiss. Amira stood and wheeled the woman into the carriage. Chapter 26. Paris.
Where am I now? A train? And who is this woman? Is she the same one who worked at the hospital? I told Dr. Avery I didn't like her, but he wouldn't listen. She spent too much time around me, watched me too much. You're being delusional, Dr. Avery told me. Your reaction to her is part of your illness. Her name is Amira. She's very kind and highly qualified. No, I tried to tell him, she's watching me. Something's going to happen. She's a Palestinian girl. I can see it in her eyes. Why didn't Dr. Avery listen to me? Or did I ever really try to tell him? I can't be sure. I can't be sure of anything. Look at the television, Gabriel. The missiles are falling on Tel Aviv again. Do you think Saddam has put chemicals on them this time? I can't stand being in Vienna when missiles are falling on Tel Aviv. Eat your pasta, Danny. Look at him right now, Gabriel. He looks so much like you. This train feels like Paris. But I'm surrounded by Arabs. Where has this woman taken me? Why aren't you eating, Gabriel? Are you feeling all right? You don't look well. My God, your skin is burning. Are you ill? Look, another missile. Please, God, let it fall on an empty building. Don't let it fall on my mother's house. I want to get out of this restaurant. I want to go home and call my mother. I wonder what happened to that boy who came to the hospital to watch over me. How did I get here? Who brought me here? And where is this train going? Snow. God, how I hate this city. But the snow makes it beautiful. The snow absolves Vienna of its sins. Snow falls on Vienna while the missiles rain down on Tel Aviv. Are you working tonight? How late will you be? Sorry, I don't know why I bothered to ask. Shit, the car is covered with snow. Help me with the windows before you go. Make sure Dunny is buckled into his seat tightly. The streets are slippery. Yes, I'll be careful. Come on, Gabriel. Hurry. I want to talk to my mother. I want to hear the sound of her voice. Give me a kiss. One last kiss. Then turn and walk away. I love to watch you walk, Gabriel. You walk like an angel. I hate the work you do for Shamron, but I'll love you always. Damn, the car won't start. I'll try again. Why are you turning around, Gabriel? Where is this woman taking me? Why are you shouting and running toward the car? Turn the key again. Silence. Smoke and fire. Get Danny out first. Hurry, Gabriel. Please get him out. I'm burning. I'm burning to death. Where is this woman taking me? Help me, Gabriel. Please help me.
Chapter 27. Paris. The Gare de Lyon is located in the 12th arrondissement of Paris, a few streets to the east of the Seine. In front of the station is a large traffic circle, and beyond the circle, the intersection of two major avenues, the Rue de Lyon and the Boulevard Diderot. It was there, seated in a busy sidewalk café popular with travelers, that Paul Martineau waited. He finished the last of a thin glass of Côte d'Oron, then signaled the waiter for a check. An interval of 5 minutes ensued before the bill appeared. He left money and a small tip, then set out toward the entrance of the station. There were several police cars in the traffic circle, and two pairs of paramilitary police standing guard at the entrance. Martineau fell in with a small cluster of people and went inside. He was nearly into the departure hall when he felt a tap at his shoulder. He turned around. It was one of the policemen who had been watching the main entrance. May I see some identification, please? Martineau drew his French national identity card from his wallet and handed it to the policeman. The policeman stared into Martineau's face for a long moment before looking down at the card. Where are you going? X. May I see your ticket, please? Martineau handed it over. It says you're supposed to return tomorrow. I changed my reservations this afternoon. Why? I needed to return early. Martineau decided to show a bit of irritation. Listen, what's this all about? Are all these questions really necessary? I'm afraid so, Monsieur Martineau. What brought you to Paris? Martineau answered. Lunch with a colleague from Paris University, a meeting with a potential publisher. You're a writer? An archaeologist, actually, but I'm working on a book. The policeman handed back the identification card. Have a pleasant evening. Thank you. Martineau turned and headed toward the terminal. He paused at the departure board, then climbed the stairs to Le Train Bleu, the famed restaurant overlooking the hall. The maitre d' met him at the door.
Do you have a reservation?
Actually, I'm meeting someone at the bar. I believe she's already here. The maitre d' stepped aside. Martineau made his way to the bar, then to a table in a window overlooking the platforms. Seated there was an attractive woman in her 40s, with a streak of gray in her long, dark hair. She looked up as Martineau approached. He bent and kissed the side of her neck. Hello, Mimi.
Paul, she whispered. So lovely to see you again.
Chapter 28. Paris. 2 blocks north of the Gare de Lyon, the Rue Perrault, 6:53 p.m.
Turn here, the girl said. Park the car.
There's no place to leave it. The street's parked up.
Trust me, we'll find a space.
Just then, a car pulled away from the curb near the Hotel Lyon Bastille. Gabriel, taking no chances, went in nose first. The girl slipped the Tonfoljo into her handbag and swung the handbag over her shoulder.
Open the trunk.
Why?
Just do as I say. Look at the clock. We haven't much time.
Gabriel pulled the trunk release lever, and the hatch opened with a dull thump. The girl snatched the key from the ignition and dropped it into the bag along with the gun and the satellite phone. Then she opened her door and climbed out. She walked back to the trunk and motioned for Gabriel to join her. He looked down. Inside was a large rectangular suitcase, black nylon, with wheels and a collapsible handle.
Take it.
No.
If you don't take it, your wife dies.
I'm not going to take a bomb into the Gare de Lyon.
You're entering a train station. It's best to look like a traveler. Take the bag.
He reached down and looked for the zipper. Locked.
Just take it.
In the tool well was a chrome-plated tire iron.
What are you doing? Do you want your wife to die?
2 sharp blows, and the lock snapped open. He unzipped the main compartment, balls of packing paper. Next he tried the outer compartments, empty.
Are you satisfied? Look at the clock. Take the bag.
Gabriel lifted the bag out and placed it on the pavement. The girl had already started walking away. He extended the handle of the bag and closed the trunk, then set out after her. At the corner of the Rue de Lyon, they turned left. The station, set on a slight promontory, loomed before them.
I don't have a ticket. I have a ticket for you.
Where are we going? Berlin? Geneva? Amsterdam?
Just walk.
As they neared the corner of the Boulevard Diderot, Gabriel saw police officers patrolling the perimeter of the station on foot and blue emergency lights flickering in the traffic circle.
They've been warned, he said. We're walking straight into a security alert. We'll be fine. I don't have a passport. You don't need it. What if we're stopped? I have it. If a policeman asks you for identification, just look at me and I'll take care of it. You're the reason we'll be stopped.
At the Boulevard Diderot, they waited for the light to change, then crossed the street amid a swarm of pedestrians.
The bag felt too light. It didn't sound right rolling over the pavement. They should have put clothing in it to weigh it down properly. What if he were stopped? What if the bag was searched and they found that it was filled with balls of paper?
What if they looked inside Palestina's bag and found the Tonfoljo?
The Tonfoljo?
He told himself to forget about the empty suitcase and the gun in the girl's bag. Instead, he focused on the sensation he'd had earlier that day, the feeling that the clue to his survival lay somewhere along the path he'd already traveled. Standing at the entrance of the station were several police officers and 2 soldiers in camouflage with automatic weapons slung over their shoulders. They were randomly stopping passengers, checking IDs, looking in bags. The girl threaded her arm through Gabriel's and made him walk faster. He could feel the eyes of the policemen on him, but no one stopped them as they went inside. The station, its roof arched and soaring, opened before them. They paused for a moment at the head of an escalator that sunk downward into the metro level of the station. Gabriel used the time to take his bearings. To his left was a kiosk of public telephones. Behind him, the stairs that led up to the Le Train Bleu. On opposite ends of the platform were 2 relay newsstands, a few feet to his right was a snack bar, above which hung the large black departure board. Just then it changed over. To Gabriel, The clapping of the characters sounded obscenely like applause for Khaled's perfectly played gambit. The clock read 6:57. "Do you see that girl using the first telephone on this side of the kiosk?" "Which girl?" "Blue jeans, gray sweater, maybe French, maybe Arab, like me."
"I see her."
"When the clock on the departure board turns to 6:58, she's going to hang up. You and I will walk over and take her place. She'll pause for a moment to give us time to get there."
"What if someone else gets there first?"
"The girl and I will take care of it. You're going to dial a number. Are you ready?"
"Yes."
"Don't forget the number. If you do, I won't tell it to you again, and your wife will die. Are you sure you're ready?"
"Give me the fucking number."
She recited it, then gave him a few coins as the clock turned to 6:58. The girl vacated her place. Gabriel walked over, lifted the receiver, and fed coins through the slot. He dialed the number deliberately, fearful that if he made a mistake the first time, he would not be able to summon the number correctly again. Somewhere a telephone began to ring. One ring. A second. A third.
"There's no answer. Be patient. Someone will pick up."
"It's rung 6 times. No one's answering."
"Are you sure you dialed the proper number? Maybe you made a mistake. Maybe your wife is about to die because you..."
"Shut your mouth," Gabriel snapped. The telephone had stopped ringing.